It's 1 o'clock.
Channel Radio.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and not the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin, because she's done a runner.
Oh, shame.
I know. Well, it's not really a shame, is it, Simon?
Well, we've got to have a bit more peace and quiet this afternoon. You and I might get a word in edgeways.
Exactly.
Oh, that'll be good.
Exactly. Yeah, so we're missing the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin, who, it's a 95th birthday this Friday. I think it's 95, isn't it?
I thought it was 96.
Oh, it could be 96. I lose track. Yeah. She's getting on anyway.
So I've been told.
Yeah. So it's her birthday on Friday, and she's been whisked off for a family holiday. So I hope you're having lots of fun. Although she's still managing to send me loads of tweets with monkeys in at the moment.
With monkeys in?
With monkeys in. You can guess what that's about.
Well, she's probably wishing some terrible disease falls upon you.
She is. I mean, one of them is actually quite funny, which is unusual for her.
Jill's just told a joke that worked.
Well, it wasn't a joke so much. I'll show you later. It's just a video. They've superimposed her face with a chimpanzee.
And of course, video works so well on the radio.
It does,
she
indeed.
She was incredibly thoughtful.
It does indeed. It's excellent, isn't it? Anyway, we hope you're having a lovely time, my dear, out there in Ibiza with the family. And I was going to say, don't drink too much, but that would be stupid, wouldn't it, really?
Have we sent her the Zimmer frame over?
She had one waiting for her at the airport.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Red Cross Zimmer frame.
Yeah. Anyway, have a lovely time, my dear, and we'll see you all in a couple of weeks. But I'm joined in the studio. We've got two fantastic guests to talk to today. We're joined by the lovely Vivian Cottrell-Lee of Wealden Times and Wealden Times Midsummer Fair. Vivian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's lovely to see you. We've never met before, but we're looking forward to hearing from you. And, of course, our old friend here, Simon Webster, late of this parish with the Money Talk Show.
Indeed. 7 years and counting.
Absolutely. Financial guru, money specialist. And we'll be talking to Simon in the second half of the show about Talis IFA, his business.
Yes.
I'm sure they'll keep us entertained as
we'll
go through the show. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you, though, all the listeners out there in the southeast of England and further afield. We've got quite a following these days from places as far as afield as Scotland, Philadelphia and Turkey. As you would.
That's a very interesting mix, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And we don't know how we got them, but we did, and we're grateful for them listening in.
And they keep coming back.
They do. They keep coming back.
Bless them.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
But we'd like to hear from you, and you can drop us a tweet. Tweet me at VanillaWeb. Use the hashtag BBunker. We've had quite a few tweets already, and I'll read some as we go through. But do tweet us or join in with a conversation as we go through. I'm going to start with a tweet, I think. That's what I'm going to do. And I had a tweet from Neville Gaunt. And he said, Paul, I'd love a shout-out on the Business Bunker show, please, for kidney patients.
All right.
Now, let's find out. Does he want some or has he got some? Limited edition sign prints, 50% of profits go to kidney care.
Okay.
So they're limited edition prints. And there's a shop, slart.me is the website. SLR.me is the website. You can check it out. They're signed limited edition prints, and 50% of all the profit goes to a Kidney Care UK charity.
Well, that's worthwhile. I had kidney stones about 10 years ago.
Oh, did you?
And ended up in K&C, and it was a bit of a...
Not nice.
Apart from being excruciatingly painful, and it really was very painful, I actually needed emergency surgery.
Oh, really?
Apparently, they'd not done it when they did. It would have been, quote, too late, unquote.
Blimey.
Because I got sepsis and all that stuff.
Oh, no.
So... having your kidneys looked after is actually quite a worthwhile thing. So it's probably a very worthwhile charity to support.
Absolutely. As you can see, Simon has taken over from Jules, and we have an immediate medical report.
Well, there you go. It'll be my only medical report, but
you started it.
I merely contributed to the conversation at your request, Mr.
Absolutely.
Andrews,
absolutely.
I think it's claimed that kidney stones is like giving birth on a pain threshold, but I think that's a male thing.
Neither of us will ever know unless you have kidney stones and then you can compare.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
No,
never mind a charming lady.
It's horrible. Do you know what causes it?
Yes, a build-up of calcium in the body, and effectively it's most prevalent in Kent, in the whole of the country, because we have particularly chalky soil.
Right.
So it's the chalky soil that gives us chalky water.
Right, okay.
And, believe it or not, eating good vegetables. So spinach, my absolute favourite vegetable, and living in Kent are the two main contributors to kidney stones.
Wow, so it's not drinking copious amounts of milk then?
That may help, because obviously there's calcium in milk, so that possibly does help.
Mm.
There you go.
That's fascinating, that.
Well, I try and bring a little bit of erudition.
Absolutely,
to your show,
I like
Paul.
It. Yeah, nice one.
Well, let's change the subject, and I'll find something else I can be erudite about.
Okay. But first of all, I want to say a big thank you to this week's show sponsor. The Business Bunker Show is pleased to partner with DG East. They're independent new and used vehicle suppliers and services supplying car and light commercial vehicles, utilising a majority of the UK-based leasing operator services. You can find out about them by going to www.dgeast.co.uk.
All right.
Cool. I was talking to Terry.
Sorry,
who's,
does the show have any other sponsors?
It has loads of sponsors.
All
and
right.
As we go through it, Simon, you will hear them because we actually have adverts for them.
Oh, as well?
As well.
Oh, I'll get a plug later then.
Oh, you certainly do. Yeah. Oh, you certainly do. Talking to Terry, we've been talking to DG East about motor vehicles over the last few months. This move away, or attempted move away from petrol and diesel to electric and he's not a fan. He's more a fan of hydrogen. And funnily enough, I saw this morning Renault cars have released a thing called the Renault Vision, which is a hybrid electric hydrogen car.
Fascinating.
Which is an interesting development.
I will be very interesting to meet this this Terry, because I've said the same thing. I don't think I've said it here, but I heard somewhere that electric cars actually have to be run for 7 years before they break even on the sort of environmental impact study.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's an awfully long time to have to run a vehicle, particularly as I tend to only keep mine for the first 3 years and then I out them. So effectively, by running my gas-guzzling petrol car, in the 3 years I own it, I'm actually being kinder to the environment. It's people that buy it off.
There's a lot of data that says petrol cars are more environmentally friendly than electric cars, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a whole myth built up around them now that because it's not got fossil fuel in it, it must be better somehow, but it isn't.
Well, and the other thing, of course, is that the electric cars rely so much on these rare earth minerals, many of which are found in Ukraine, that effectively it's becoming a real issue.
Would you like a real laugh?
Go on then.
I don't know if you know much about battery technology, but a battery of any kind has two parts to it, an anode and a cathode. And a cathode is the bit where they use rare earth minerals. The anode is the boring bit.
Right.
And the anode uses graphite.
Okay.
Okay. But there isn't enough graphite in the world for the amount of batteries, so they have to use synthetic graphite. Guess what it's made from?
Oil?
Oil.
Yeah.
And there's a massive oil refinery in Hull, which is the only place in Europe that produces synthetic graphite. They produce the raw material from oil for synthetic graphite. It's shipped to China, where it's made into usable graphite, shipped back and put in batteries for cars.
That must have a marvellous environmental footprint.
Exactly.
The whole thing's a joke, isn't it? The whole thing's a joke.
You know, and this is a lot of the problem, and I think, without being funny, the whole environmental movement, the whole climate change movement, is starting to come under attack now because they're doing too many stupid things. Mm. Yeah. People are starting to ask questions and go, but why is that environmentally friendly? Mm. You know, why do you think, you know.
It's like health and safety.
Yeah. It's like a lot of things. I mean, I don't know. We've discussed this a few times on the show. Many years ago, when I was a boy, I worked.
Oh, no, that's. Sorry, Paul, that's many
centuries
many years ago.
Yeah. When I was just a lad, I actually worked in the nuclear industry.
That explains the second hit.
Yeah, exactly. The green pallor. Well, you say that. The funny enough, the nuclear power plant, I worked for a design company, combustion engineering, and we designed Three Mile Island.
Oh, that was
which
that
was the world's
success.
First nuclear accident.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. I was there.
And you were so proud of that.
Yeah. We had one. There wasn't even a fatality. There was only one victim, and he broke his arm.
Oh. Well, you'd obviously built in sufficient safety systems and redundancies.
No, I don't know if you know what happened. It was actually a complete operator error, and the guy that broke his arm was the guy that caused it.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. What happened was he misread one of the dials and he thought he had a radiation leak. So he went through the process of a quick shutdown, which involved throwing a lever, a mechanical lever, that shut the core down. Having thrown the lever, he realised he'd made a mistake. So he tried to stop the lever from shutting, which broke his arm.
Oh, goodness me. I'll tell you what, it's been worth coming out just to hear that story. I shall tell that at my next dinner party.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't realise. I mean, I'm going to be very controversial here now. Chernobyl, if you read the actual report from the World Health Organization, if I asked you how many people do you think died as a result of the Chernobyl nuclear accident?
I understood it was something like 20 or 30,000, but you'll probably tell me it was two or three.
54.
Okay.
The numbers that everybody quotes are the people that contracted leukemia and cancer within 100 square miles of Chernobyl within 10 years of the accident.
And that's not the excess number, that's the actual number.
That's the actual number,
right.
And there's no actual link between the two events.
That is controversial because yes. I've never heard that one before.
But the actual World Health, it's on the website. It's on their website. The WHO report actually cites 54 fatalities.
Very expensive disaster, nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. But for all of that, and I would say this, being a protagonist of it, nuclear is the safest, environmentally friendly production of energy that we have and have ever had. It's interesting stuff because one of the big hopes for the nuclear industry is, of course, fusion technology.
Yes.
And we've just opened the world's first fusion power station.
Is it opened?
It opened in Nottingham.
I missed the opening.
It opened in Nottingham. It produced electricity using fusion. Not a lot.
Mm.
It only produced 30 seconds worth of electricity.
It blew up.
No, it's operating properly.
All right.
It was an experiment to see that they could actually produce electricity from it because it is very experimental technology. The interesting thing is the power plant, it's a tokamak power plant. The tokamak power plant is built on an old coal mine in Nottingham. And they produce electricity, in theory, they produce electricity from it. They estimate it will actually come on stream producing reasonable amounts of electricity by 2050.
On an industrial scale.
Yeah.
And, of course, the advantage of fusion is that it's significantly safer and it doesn't keep generating this never-ending nuclear waste that has a half-life of a couple of centuries.
Yeah.
And
Although even that... The trouble is, like so many things in life, there's a lot of myths about nuclear energy. One, the biggest problem with nuclear is we invented it in the middle of the Cold War. And everybody confuses nuclear power with nuclear bombs. And they're not remotely similar. And in fact, nuclear isn't actually very dangerous. Because the amount of radiation produced in a nuclear reactor isn't much more than the background radiation you'd find in your garden anyway.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
And I've done a tour of Dungeness and they didn't tell me that.
No. I mean, it's not, you know, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute you should go and have a bath in radiation, because it's not healthy, but it isn't quite as bad as they make it out. But the biggest, but the biggest issue with nuclear is, in the early days, you had to get rid of the uranium waste. And when they first started doing it, they encased it in concrete and threw it in the sea. Mm. Yeah, which wasn't very environmentally friendly, but they didn't have any other way of dealing with it. What most people realise now is there is virtually no waste.
Well, they could stick it on SpaceX and dump it on the moon.
No, there's nothing to get rid of.
Oh, right. It's come down to that.
Yeah, if you look now, there's not in the UK because we don't do it anymore, but if you look on the French websites, because they've got 54 nuclear reactors,
yeah,
or the American websites, or the American Nuclear Association website, I can't remember the exact number, so I'm making this up a little bit, but something like 97% of all uranium waste is reused in the reactor.
I didn't know that.
Nowadays, so there is incredibly small amounts of nuclear waste nowadays. They found ways of recycling it and reusing it. They reuse it back in the same reactor.
Well, there you are. You live and learn.
Yeah.
I knew there was a reason I was generally in favour of nuclear, because I'm getting very bored of going to the seaside and just being able to see rows and rows of propellers, which aren't terribly efficient and cost an awful lot of money.
Absolutely.
And only work when the wind's blowing. So
absolutely. We've got a new scheme now as well, of course, which is SMRs, which are small modular reactors.
Yeah, heard about those.
And Rolls-Royce have got the contract to build 240 of them around the UK. Each SMR will power about 1 million homes.
Oh,
yeah. So, and they only
there's not as many as 240 million. Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
No, because there's 60 million people in the UK.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah, but I mean, 1 million homes. Yeah, but of course, there's businesses and all other kinds of things that need power.
Stuff, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just trying to do the maths.
Yeah. The interesting thing with SMRs is, of course, they're built off-site, they're bought to site and assembled, and it only takes 4 years to build an SMR from factory to installation.
Well, that's going to make a huge difference, isn't
it? Yeah, when you look at the mess that they're making of Hinkley Point, which is the big conventional nuclear station.
That's a 20-year build time or something.
Yeah, well, it's just been delayed by another year, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Typical, it's overrun by £1 billion, a year behind schedule.
A bit like the Queen Elizabeth line.
It's like any big government project, isn't it? It just never gets there. The thing about SMRs and Rolls-Royce are building the power packs. Well, Rolls-Royce already know how to do that, because all they are the same nuclear power pack that they put in a nuclear submarine.
All right. And they work quite well.
And they work really well, yeah.
It was. I tell you, interesting segue. I was listening to something this morning, and it was a woman who had a massive career as an engineer, doing among other things. She put up the first GSM network in Kenya. She's done all sorts of stuff in the electronic arena, and she'd recently moved to Ofcom. So she's had a career as a chartered engineer, putting telecom systems in all over the world, and then she moved to Ofcom, and she said the difference in language between working in the private sector at a senior level and working in the public sector at a senior level it took her 2 years.
Yeah.
A very smart woman with a huge career behind her, took her 2 years to get her head around the culture change, because the public sector mindset is just so vastly different to that of the private sector on all levels.
It's absolutely true, having worked in both myself as well. I know I one of the last things I did when I had a proper job.
You had a proper job?
I did have a proper job many years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you'd always been a radio groupie.
Yeah. Well, I have, but then I'm really so old that I started that late in life. The last time I had a proper job as a management consultant, I worked in a couple of NHS trusts, and that was 25 years ago. And I read a report the other day, which was almost word for word the same as my report I produced 25 years ago, saying why it failed, why they don't talk to each other, why their processes are wrong, why it's not patient-focused, and why they'll never succeed, no matter how much money you throw at it. And the report was almost identical to the one I wrote 25 years ago, and they've never done anything about it.
No.
But one of the interesting things, and what you say though, Simon, that I've seen, and I don't know if you've come across this, is unfortunately a lot of private sector large-scale organisations are starting to move towards the public sector model. They're becoming more and more bogged down in their own processes and their own political correctness and their own nonsense. I mean,
think we're all seeing that.
Have you seen my favourite?
I don't know what
bank.
Your favourite is, so I don't know.
The last year or so, I've had a bit of a ongoing.
With your favourite bank?
With my favourite bank.
We talked about this the last time I was on.
With my favourite bank. Well, they got into trouble this week, big time, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Not that I'd mention who they are, HSBC, who are the world's worst bank, but one of their senior executives turned up at Davos.
Oh, I saw this.
Did you see that?
Absolute classic.
Yeah.
Absolute classic. You're shaking your head.
No.
Oh, you've got to.
Tell me.
He effectively likened the climate crisis to year 2K and said he was. So this was a guy who was actually heading up, I think it was.
ESG, ethical
social governance response, so ethical fund management for HSBC. Mm-hmm. And he stood up in front of a conference, possibly after one gin and tonic too many, and said he was fed up for his whole career. He'd had these naysayers and these people full of gloom and doom saying that the world was going to end. It was going to end with year 2K, and now it was going to be climate change. And they're always looking for something to scare you and make the world a worse place and put more regulations in and put more taxes on to achieve precisely nothing. Now, I'm going to expose myself to massive flame here. There is a small part of me that thinks he has a point.
There's a large part of me that agrees with him.
The whole of HSBC's national executive and all their managing, senior board manager worldwide have distanced themselves. I think he's going to get fired.
He's been suspended.
Pending being fired for stating a view. Now, the interesting bit, and bearing in mind I am challenged over this whole area, the other side of the coin, because I like to do both sides for the sake of balance, we're not the BBC but we try, is in Australia climate change is actually becoming a really big thing. There's about a third of homes in Australia now that can't get insurance against flood because due to climate change, allegedly, there's this massive, massive flood risk, and they are losing millions, billions of pounds on the housing market.
It's I don't want to get into it too much, but again, it's one of those perennial issues where you face a problem that becomes an overriding global problem when it's actually a localized problem. And it's the same with year 2K. And funnily enough, I did the year 2K project for a very well-known institution, which made me laugh because...
Well, year 2K, for those that remember, was the fact that they bounced a load of programming languages that meant that when the dating system in a lot of DOS-related programs weren't going to be able to cope with the change of century because the dating format ran out.
All it was, in the old Intel chips... The register only had a two-position place for the date, yeah? So everybody assumed 19 and went up to 1999.
Yeah.
When it changed to 2000, what they were worried was is it would revert to 1901 rather than 2001. The thing that everybody ignored, because they panicked over this, was that there's a lot of institutions and a lot of organisations that would have found this out at least 20 years beforehand. So I worked in banking, yeah? We wrote mortgages. We wrote mortgages for 25 years. If we'd have had a problem, we would have had it 25 years ago when we wrote the mortgage with an expiration date of 2025, yeah? But nobody did. So there were loads of people that were never going to have the problem, but they still did the project anyway, despite the evidence.
But an awful lot of management consultants made an awful lot of money out of writing reports about what was going to happen at that time. Did they, Paul?
Yeah, possibly.
I can't imagine how anybody would have been profiting out of those people's fear.
But again, it's like the climate issue, yeah, has, if you think about it, a 2 degree rise on the climate in the UK would be quite pleasant.
Mm.
Yeah, our average temperature is 17 degrees in the UK. So 19 degrees, we would be bordering on...
That's what we've got the air conditioning set on for in here.
Yeah.
Because it's comfortable.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we rose 19 degrees as an average, that would be like living in mid-France.
Yeah.
But of course,
it's a bit of a problem in Delhi where it's 49 at the moment.
Exactly. I was going to say, there was a point last year that somebody pointed out, and I checked, and it was true. On a day last year, in Djibouti, in West Africa, it was 42 degrees. On the same day in Svalbard in Siberia, it was minus 39. So if you take the average of those two, it doesn't really tell you a lot,
does it? It's quite comfortable, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the problem is, as you quite rightly say, there are parts of the world that are affected badly, and there are parts of the world that would actually improve with.
Well, I want to get out to the Maldives while they're still there, because if the oceans rise by another 6 inches, the Maldives will disappear.
Yeah, except there's a little bit of a drawback to that.
Which is what?
Well, they've just built another airport there. There's five airports they've built in the last 10 years since they told us they were all going to drown. Have you ever been to the Maldives?
No, I haven't. It's on the list.
I have. It's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a collection of about 2,000 islands.
Yes, so I understand. And mainly sand.
Sorry?
Mainly sand and mainly quite low.
Yeah, a lot of coral, yeah. And they're all at sea level. Yeah, they are all
quite low.
At risk of
flooding.
But they're not. The sea level hasn't actually risen, and when they build an airport, it's built in the sea. And they've built five in the last 10 years. Mm. And it isn't. And in fact, one of the Pacific islands, I might be wrong, I think it's Tuvalu, the sea level's gone down, not up.
Okay.
And,
well, yeah.
And but it's interesting, because there was some kind of, I don't understand it. My eldest son read geophysics at university, so this is all his field, so he sends me this stuff.
And you try and interpret it.
And I try and interpret it based on my limited knowledge. But Tuvalu, there's a reason why the sea level went down. It's something to do with planetary expansion due to tectonic plates. But it's actually...
Yes, that would make sense.
Yeah, it's actually got higher out of the water than lower. But then one of, like Tristan da Cunha or something, there's a half-inch rise in the water level, so it's even that's not uniform, is the point I'm making. Yeah
well, averages can conceal a multitude of
that's the problem,
troughs.
And that's what my view on all of this is that I think you have to do it you know, one focus at a time. Yeah, it might not be good for you, it might be good for you. You might not have a problem, but you've got a problem.
Yeah, I mean, on average, in this studio, we're quite intelligent. But if we take the lady out of the room, we're probably not.
Goes down there. Yeah, yeah.
Plummets.
Well, talking about intelligence.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Talking about intelligence, you know what I'm going to do now?
Go on, then.
I'm going to play some Cheesy Tunage.
Oh, Cheesy Tunage. You've been looking forward to that.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
What's a cheesy tune, then, Paul?
See if you can get it.
I can hardly hear it through my
headphones. Yeah, it'll come on.
Scarborough Fair.
It's Scarborough Fair. Did you see what I did there?
Paul Simon.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's Simon and Garfunkel, isn't it?
It's Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
Sweet Saint Rosemary and Charles, born in that sunset, Independent financial advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com. Grow your business with Kent's Best Business Events. Visit bestbusinessevents.co.uk.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with Workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Loch Associates Group. Let us look after all your people needs so you can focus on growing your business. No long-term tie-ins, just responsive, commercially minded support. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
This is Channel 2.
That was Scarborough Fair. Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, indeed, and we went.
Did you?
Yeah.
To Scarborough Fair?
I think I did once.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it good?
I think it was.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know if it was a Scarborough Fair that Simon and Garfunkel were referring to, but there was a fair in Scarborough and probably still is.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
But there's a fair nearer of us.
Is there?
There is.
Is it on the Weald?
It is.
Is it?
It's in Rotherdon.
Do we know anybody that has anything to do with that?
I don't know. Should we find out?
That's a good idea. Why don't we do that?
Let's do that.
Do you know anything about the Wealden Fair?
I think I might do.
Oh, fantastic. Why do you know about it?
Well, I've been working there for the last 3 years.
Working there or running it?
Running it.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show Vivian Cottrell-Lee. Vivian is Chief Executive of Wealden Times.
Managing Director.
Managing Director. Sorry, she's English. Yeah.
She's still the boss.
Yeah, yeah. Of the Wealden Times and also the organiser of the Wealden Times Midsummer Fair. Vivian, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to see you, meet you and hear from you. I'll tell you what, start off by telling the listener, we've only got one, tell the listener about the Wealden Times itself and then we'll talk about the fair.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So the Wealden Times celebrates everything that's fabulous about Kent. We have been going for 20 years.
Wow. 20 years,
which is incredible. And the magazine is really looking at giving people inspiration for their homes, looking at great schools in the communities. And great recipes, actually, and all sorts. Anything at all to do with Kent.
It's actually a very upmarket, glossy lifestyle magazine, is it not?
It is a very upmarket, glossy magazine aimed at really affluent people in Kent.
Glossy, upmarket people. Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask a mug question? What area, in terms of towns, defines the Weald that is your sort of area-ish?
Well, although we're called the Wealden Times, we actually cover the whole of Kent.
Okay.
So we've got a distribution of 18,000 printed copies.
That's a lot.
A lot, but way and above the biggest title in Kent.
Right.
And we distribute through, we have a local network of distribution, which is at train stations, which we're unique for. So we're the only magazine you can actually get from train stations. And we do that because we're looking for the affluent female commuter. And then we also go through places like Cook, through local antiques, through local boutiques. And so we're really supporting the community because actually a lot of people go for our magazine every month to the same place. And so it increases footfall for the local communities as well. So we're it's been extremely successful as a magazine and it's really well loved.
But it is huge.
It's
one of those funny things. I can answer your question about the Weald as well at some other point, but I won't take up Vivian's time.
Okay.
it is in an incredibly successful magazine, and it's an interesting phenomenon because in the world of publishing, especially in newsprint and things like that, we've seen a drop off in readership of newspapers and down market magazines. But there is a very, very definite demographic for niche magazines, and they can be as niche as something like a lifestyle magazine like World and Times. And the biggest selling magazine in the United Kingdom, which is Carp World, yeah, which is all
biggest
about
participation sport in the country, fishing
yeah. Yeah.
And always surprises me to learn that because I'm not even remotely interested.
Exactly. But. And Carp World, which is all just about carp fishing, is one of the biggest red magazines in the UK. But it's this niche focus that makes magazines like that, and magazines, not that World and Times is at all fishy. you see what I did there?
You almost made a joke, Paul, but it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't really, did it? No.
But I think the interesting thing as well with the World and Times, which has been really different in the last 3 years, is it's also free.
Yeah.
So we're called Priceless Media, but the actual magazine itself is a glossy, upmarket, glamorous title, and it's free.
Yeah.
And so where we would usually be up against the House and Gardens and the Country Livings of the world, the £5 average cost price now of all those magazines is such a lot of money when you can pick up something fabulous like ours.
Mm.
So, you know, we obviously, from a business point of view, that makes this really interesting.
Absolutely, it does. And it also, it broadens out your readership.
Yeah, it does.
Because I quite often pick up a copy and read it while I'm in the Raja waiting for my takeaway.
All right. Where's the Raja?
Tenterton.
All right, okay.
Yeah. We love Tenterton.
A little further east.
That's where I live, yeah.
Sorry. A little further east than me.
Sure.
Because I'm on the M20, so...
Right. Do you not have takeaways up your end of the world?
I do, but they're not called the Raja and they're not in Tenterton.
True. But do they have the World and Times in their waiting room?
No, they don't, that I've noticed. We might have to do something about that.
Somebody would have brought it in.
Yeah. I used to read them in the dentist, but I can't afford the dentist anymore.
Who can?
We're not in dentists anymore, actually.
Are you not?
No, but in Tenterton.
That's why I stopped going.
We're in Woodcocks massively. We love Woodcocks.
Oh, Paul Woodcock. Yeah.
Paul Woodcock's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And they have nearly 1,000 copies a month from us.
Do they? Yeah.
What's Woodcocks, for the ignorant who don't live in Tenterton?
It's a really beautiful interiors shop. Mm. Furniture, amazing at Christmas time for your Christmas decorations. A real community feel in the high street.
It's hard to describe because they have eclectic things in
there,
don't
they? It's really eclectic.
The kind of stuff. The shop itself is next door to Waitrose in Tenterton Town Centre. Yeah.
So they've on the left as you go in from at the Ashford area.
It's on the left. Yeah, it's Sayers Lane,
down
which is
that
little.
Alley.
Yeah, and they. I don't know if you've still got it. You used to have another shop in Bodiam or Rye or somewhere.
I don't know if he's still got that one.
I don't think he has, but the Tenterton one, it's interiors, but he has quirky stuff in there as well.
It's really unusual. He'll always take, if you buy a sofa or buy something from him, he'll actually come to your home and put it in your home and style it for you.
Yeah.
So it's a really amazing service.
I bought a fabulous sofa. I bought a fabulous leather sofa, and he turned up with it, and he went, "Where do you want it?" I went, "There." And he went, "No." I went, "Pardon?" He went, "No, I'm not putting it there." "Why?" He said, "It doesn't go, you idiot." And I went, "Really?" "Yeah, no, it's going to go over there." "Oh, okay."
And you looked and he thought, did you go, "Yes, he had a point," or did you?
I thought he had a very good point.
It's interesting, isn't it, how these things work out?
Yeah.
He is
some people
so,
have got an eye.
Yeah. He's our So Woodcock, So Wealden. We actually call ourselves that. So with him, amazing. Thank you.
So, that's the World and Times, upmarket lifestyle magazine. Tell us a little bit now, Vivian, about the Midsummer Fair.
Well, so the Midsummer Fair launched because of the magazine, because we decided we wanted to do a live event. Mm. And it's a lifestyle 3-day event promoting the best of local, but also showcasing brands across the UK. Mm. We focus on designer makers and crafters to create a really amazing shopping extravaganza for our visitors. Mm. It's at Hole Park, which is just glorious. Mm. It's definitely one of my favourite places in Kent. Mm. And it's a mix of homes, interiors, fashions and jewellery, garden wares and food and drink. And with over 250 exhibitors, it's a huge event. I mean, and it's a 3-day event with 8,000 visitors who come in. So it's just lovely. And we've got beautiful food, great local wines, local beers. Mm. It really is a nice day out. And we allow dogs.
When does it run?
When does it run? It runs from the, I'm going to have to check because of last year, 9th to the 11th of June. 9th to the 11th of June, and it's 9 till 4:30 each day.
Okay. Now, did you say 4 years it had been going?
No, we've been 12 years.
12 years, yeah.
And then we also run a midwinter fair, which is at the Hop Farm.
Right, okay. So I'm assuming that it stopped for a year or two at least.
It stopped for a whole year.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely desperate for all of us, as you can imagine. We literally just had no events. And what we did do is, because we're one of the things about, from a business point of view, is that we're very much part of the business with our exhibitors. Right. If we don't have an event, they've got nowhere to exhibit.
Right. Okay.
So they struggle to sell their products if there's no events available. And the event, I'm going to call it a circuit, but that doesn't make it sound very glamorous. But there are people who do go to 6-10 events a year as businesses, so they're bringing in their crafts and their artisan products, etc. So with nothing available for a whole year, they did all really struggle, as did we. So what we did do is, we, for that over COVID, we had a virtual fair. And we had a virtual fair over the Christmas period where we had 4 days where we promoted it, set up a website and allowed people to sell to our visitors who would have normally been there.
Right.
So whilst it wasn't a money-making venture at all, it was very definitely something supporting our exhibitors and trying to help them to push their products.
But what a great idea.
Yeah, it was really good. And then we came back last year with a bang, and actually we came back in July because we came back a month later than we normally would to make sure. And we were the first exhibition event out of the box after COVID.
Wow.
And
he got off to a flyer.
It was massive. It was one of our best events ever.
Well, it would be, wasn't it? Because people are chomping at the bit to get out and meet other people and do physical things rather than virtual things.
Pre-booked tickets. Yeah. So everybody was getting used to that.
Yeah.
But yes, we were the first event that you didn't have to wear masks.
Okay. Oh. Give us a feel for the size of the event, Vivian. So how many kind of stall holders or exhibitors do you have?
So 250 exhibitors.
Wow.
So it's huge.
Yeah.
Four massive marquees and then two shopping avenues, we call them. And then 14 catering companies who are really glamorous. I call them catering. That's probably unfair to them. So, you know, we've got a lovely vegan company called Eat Shoots and Leaves.
Right. I know the joke around that one.
Yeah.
Thank you. So do we.
We can't say that on it.
And then a company called Otopia, who do the most amazing flapjacks. And so we've got a whole host of different people who come to the event. And the event ticket, which is £14.50 for the day, also includes a visit to the gardens at Hull Park.
Right.
So you get the whole day out.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about Hull Park. That's in Rolvenden, yeah?
So it's in Rolvenden, and it's privately owned by a charming chap called Edward Barham. His family have been there for centuries, literally centuries. And it's a really beautiful house, and the gardens are the area that are open to the public. It's 14 acres.
Yep.
And it's very much a, you know, it's well loved and beautiful.
It's a beautiful place.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And actually, he's really well known for the bluebells in bluebell gardens, etc. as well. But it's beautiful and definitely worth a visit.
Fantastic. So that's the Wealden Times Midsummer Fair taking place at Hove Park in Rolvenden on June the
9th to the 11th.
9th to the 11th. Fantastic. If people want to find out what's there, how to book a ticket, get their tickets, what's the best thing to do?
Best thing to do is go to wealdentimes-fair.co.uk, where you've got all the listings of all of the lovely exhibitors, and you can click through onto their websites to choose and pick what you're going to shop and buy before you arrive.
Fantastic.
So, and if not, you can always give us a call, but just otherwise it's #WealdenTimes, and we're on Instagram, Facebook,
all the social Twitter, platforms.
All the social platforms.
Fantastic. There's a link to it on the Kent Business Radio website. That will stay there as well. It's such a lovely thing. I've been to a couple in the past. It's such a lovely thing.
And I've just got one thing to add.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd forgotten about the school choirs as well. We've got the school choirs from local schools coming every day. And we've also got the Cranbrook Town Band on the Saturday. So it's a really nice treat.
Are they an oompa band or a brass band?
Brass band. Brass band.
Oh,
yeah, charity brass band. Fantastic. Really fabulous. And it is the local Cranbrook Town Band.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, fantastic. It's a brilliant event. It really is. I've been to the Christmas fair as well in the past. Because I live locally. So
can you sell me a ticket now?
Yes, of course.
Excellent. Right, I'll have two, please.
Lovely. Thank you.
So there you go.
It was worth a trip. You sold two tickets.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've never been. It sounds fantastic.
It's really
it is wonderful. It is a wonderful one. It's a Kentish event. Do you know what I mean? It just is. It just it ties together everything about that area of Kent and the Weald.
Mm.
And I'll answer your question because you might find this interesting because I'm a bit
I'm always interested when you speak, Paul.
Yeah, no.
As is our listener.
Yeah, well, no, yeah, well, he's tied to a chair, so he has to listen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a history buff and certain periods of history, but to answer your question about the Weald, the Andred's Weald, which is what it was originally called, used to spread from Portsmouth right the way through to Dover. It was one big forest. It was one of the biggest forests in Europe.
And what was the first one? Andred's?
Andred's Weald, it was called.
Andred's?
Andred's.
You never heard of it.
Okay. Andred's Weald. It's what the Romans called it, Andred's Weald.
Okay.
Okay. It then got shortened to the Weald. Obviously, it's contracted quite a lot since then.
Is Weald a name for forest,
yeah,
then?
Yeah.
All right, I didn't know that either, so I've learned something else.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a huge, huge forest.
Yeah. All right.
Massive forest that covered most part of Hampshire, most of southern Surrey, all of east and west Sussex, and most of the southeast of Kent.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I live and learn.
Yep. The interesting thing is, and that, just as an aside, one of the reasons that there are so many places in Kent that end in den as a word is that den is an Anglo-Saxon word for farmstead in the forest.
Well, I know.
So Tenterton is the farmstead in the forest of the men of Thanet, is what it actually means.
I'm sitting here with my chin on the floor at your perspicacity, Mr. Andrews.
Well, it gets better.
You've got more.
I've got more. And eventually it comes back to some relevance to what we're doing here as well.
Really?
Yeah.
That's going to be a really incredible landing. I'm going to watch that with interest. Go for it.
In the 13th century was a chap called Willikin of the Weald. And he's a real historical character, okay?
All right.
And he is basically the basis for Robin Hood. Except that what happened in 1210, 1215, we were invaded by the Dauphin of France, okay?
Mm.
And Willikin of the Weald staged a guerrilla operation in which he kept picking them off as they come ashore and tried to traverse the Weald to get to London or the rest of the UK. And he would ambush them in the forest, steal all their stuff and kill them. Yeah?
My kind of guy.
Yep. And he was only 18, 18 or 19, and he had a little band of mercenaries, and after each raid, they would disappear back to their farmsteads, and he would disappear back to his home in Rolvenden.
I never knew any of that. I shall have to look. I've written it down. I'm going to look it up.
Willikin of the Weald.
I've written it down in green pen on my iPad.
It's one of those things that is amazing, that all the myths and legends we have about Arthur and Robin Hood and all those kind of things that have no direct historical link. The one person we can categorically prove existed, we don't really talk about very much. It's really weird, isn't it?
I've never heard him talked about before. I always imagined, stroke had heard, that Robin Hood was based on a real historical character that lived in Nottingham around the time. Mm. Clearly not.
Well, the problem with a lot of these myths, the same as the Arthurian legend, if you go to other countries, they all have the same myth.
And William Tell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you go to France or if you go anywhere, they all have very similar myths. So it is hard to kind of separate the reality from the storytelling, apart from this particular chap, because he's a well-known historical character. And there's actually documents that exist citing him. The King of England granted him lands in Rolvenden as a thank you for protecting the country. Yeah, and there are charters that you can see in a museum and read about him. And yet we kind of don't talk about
him. I'm feeling very ignorant. I think I'm going to have to do a little bit of research on this.
Yeah, there's actually not a lot of other information about him. You can find out who he was, what he did, and where he lived. He lived in a hamlet that doesn't exist now. It's now part of Rolvenden, called Cressingham, or something like that. He lived on a little manor house.
There's a duck named after Cressingham.
No, that's Gressingham.
Gressingham. Oh, I was close. Well, there you go. Show my ignorance there. And you were right there, weren't you? You know about ducks.
She was on it. She was on it. Yeah.
All right, never mind. Yeah. Oh.
Anyway,
I'm good at money.
Yeah, I know.
Catering.
we're going to talk to you about that later. But it's fantastic, and we're looking forward to the Wealden Summer Fair. It is always a fantastic local event, and people come from all over. I say it's a Kentish event, but of course it's on the Sussex border, so everybody from Kent and Sussex goes to it. Be there.
Well, I'm going to be. I'm going to buy some tickets.
You're just going to buy some tickets.
Yeah,
please come say hello.
Mm, absolutely. So do get along to it. It's the Wealden Fair. All the details are on the Kent Business Radio website, or you can find them on all the social media channels under Wealden Times, I think, mostly your Twitter handles.
Yeah,
and Facebook and Insta. Vivian, thank you so much for that. Do stay with us for the rest of the show, but it's fascinating to hear about both the magazine and its continued success. And it is a lovely magazine as well, I know. You've saved me having to go to the dentist again. Because it was the only reason I went to the dentist before.
What, to get the book?
No. So I could read the magazine.
Oh, well,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. We're blessed. I mean, I don't know how you see this, because they're two completely separate magazines. But we also have a thing called the Wealden Advertiser, which is a free paper. You know all these little village directories you get these days? Well, the Wealden Advertiser was the forerunner of all those, and it's a slightly bigger paper. It's a free advertising paper. There's not really any editorial in it, is there? Not very much, anyway.
It's a
bit of advertorial, but yeah.
We love them. We advertise with them.
Yeah. But again, it's one of those successful papers that has been around for years and years and years. And the story behind that was fascinating. I can't remember the chap's name that started it. Do you remember his name? No, I can't remember his name. Anyway, he owns a printers, he owned a printing company, and they didn't have much work on, so he printed a magazine just to see what it was like. That was about 25 years ago, and now that's all they do. They don't do printing anymore. They just do the magazine, do the paper. And the reason I mention it is because it's the two things you find everywhere around where I live, wherever you go, shops, dentists, doctor, surgery, they've always got a copy of the Wealden Times and the Wealden Advertiser.
We shall have to change it in posting, my little village. But then we have a telephone box and a village hall and no pub. So ours is the smallest village, one of the smallest villages there is, because it's only about 100 houses. Wow. And no facilities.
You know that BT have been selling off telephone boxes?
Yes, I think they've sold us ours. But I've got to tell you something. I've been whinging about this on air for years, but just around BT, Openreach, slight segue. Mm. I now have 500 megabits per second broadband at home.
Don't do that.
I have it. I've been using a 4G router for the last 7 years, and it's now redundant. I have fiber to the house, and it all works, and it's really good. And I'm so excited.
He's doing this just to annoy me.
Well, I live to annoy you, Paul. You know this.
Yeah, he's doing it just to annoy me. I have 8 megabits at my place, and I work from home. And that's it.
That's all I had at one stage. Yeah. But you can get away with it, because what you can do is you can do what I did, was buy a 4G router. Mm. And the 4G router was giving us 25 megabits, which is enough to stream HDTV live. Mm. So that's okay. But now 500 megabits. I'm so excited. It's pathetic.
Funnily enough, I just got a message from my son, Jamie, about something completely different. Jamie lives in France, and they don't have telephones in where he lives.
No, but they've got high-speed internet.
Not where he lives.
Oh, right. Well, he's in the middle of a field somewhere, isn't he?
He's in the middle of nowhere, He lives in the Dordogne, and there isn't any houses, let alone anything else. And they don't have... He doesn't have a telephone line, because they won't put one in, because it's too far from the nearest telegraph pole. So he does use 4G, and it kind of works there. I had VFast, the microwave link, but the trees grew.
Yeah, and no line of sight. We had the same problem. Mm. We signed up with VFast, and they were coming in, and they couldn't get line of sight to the local antenna, even from our chimney.
So. Well, I was at the very end of the link. And it worked. I got 20 megabits for the first year, and then it degraded, and they came and looked, and they said, sorry, all the trees in between grew up, and now we haven't got line of sight properly anymore.
Oh. And you're not anywhere near... the A28 hasn't been fibred yet?
It's not even due to be fibred.
Oh, that's such a shame.
It's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. The DP point... which is about 50 yards from my front garden, is fully enabled for fibre, but they're not providing any.
That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, the funny, I don't know what it is about Tenston. I don't know whether people think, oh, it's quaint, so we're not going to disturb it or something. Have you heard of Truly? They're a Kent-based company that put in their own fibre optic networks.
No, but I knew there was one around. I didn't know it was called Truly.
Yeah, it's called Truly, and they're brilliant. Okay. I'm at my mum's. My mum's 93, bless her. Right, she's not been very well, so I look after her most. I go to the most days to look after her. Okay. She lives in Headcorn. Okay. She has a BT link because I go there a lot. I made her put in broadband so that I could use it when I'm there.
Right. Okay.
She gets 80 megabytes off of her BT link.
A very respectable score.
A very respectable score for someone that doesn't use it.
Yeah.
Unless I'm there, yeah. I go outside and there's two blokes working in the road. I go, hello, what are you up to? And they go, we're from Truly. We're putting in fibre optics. Would you like fibre optic? We can give you 300 megabytes. I went, you don't really need it. I said, but I need it at home. When are you doing Tenston? No, we're not doing Tenston.
So where's your mum then?
Headcorn.
Oh, Headcorn. Sorry, yes, you said, yeah. Sorry, yeah. They're not doing Tenston.
They're not doing Tenston. Well, why aren't you doing Tenston? No, mate, it's just not on the schedule.
Not enough chimney pots, I suppose.
I've no idea. Funnily enough, I was at an event. I was at an event a couple of weeks ago with Potter's Home Digital, who have just launched garden entertainment systems.
Okay.
Ooh. That's outdoor TVs to you and me.
All right, okay.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I bet.
Anyway, they have a garden set up behind their shop in Tenston.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, the mayor, he happens to be the mayor of Ashford at the moment as well, Callum, was there. And we were talking about such things, and I was moaning that Tenston, and he said, I had a meeting with BT, and I said to them, we haven't got fibre. And they went, no, you're not on the schedule. And why? Well, it's just we've never got round to it.
Blooming useless.
I
have to say, I mean, I wouldn't get sued, but my least favourite company to do business in the world for many years has had those two initials, B&T.
I always use an anagram.
Oh, yeah.
TB.
Yeah. it's probably very appropriate. But I have to tell you, actually, and this is just the other flip side, Openreach, when they installed my broadband, were literally brilliant. Getting it sorted out.
Yeah.
We used, I'll remember the name of the company that did it. They won the Which Best Buy Fiber Award. They're the only company to have got it, and the name will come back to me in a minute. But they subcontract to BT, as does everybody. Subcontract to Openreach, as does everybody. And the guy actually showed me there were three data hookup points in our shared drive that were there. I didn't even see him put them in. And he said, so all I've got to do is get the wire from that socket that we've already provisioned there, connect your wire and run it to your house. And they tried to run it through the conduit that my phone wire was through, and my next door neighbour had unwittingly stuck a gatepost through the conduit, which is one of the reasons probably our phone wire was all a bit wonky.
It squashed it. That's why it wasn't going very fast.
Yeah, it squashed it. So they'd really restricted the bandwidth. And they had to actually go and dig up my next door neighbour's garden. My next door neighbour was very gracious, gave immediate permission. After they dug the garden up, I couldn't see the hole, and they got the wire through to my house, and they did an immaculate job, left the wire there. 2 days later, a guy from Openreach came up and drilled a hole in the side of the house and put it in and got it all wired up, and it was all working. And they showed up on time, and they were really helpful and very friendly. I was seriously impressed. I know, it's just, but I'm on such a wave because I finally got broadband. I've lived in villages for 30 years and I've now got high-speed broadband for the first time.
I hate you, Simon. I just hate you.
I'll tell you what, though, high-speed broadband at home, Paul, it's really fantastic.
I hate you,
it's
Simon.
Lovely. It's great.
You ought
to get it.
Don't. I tell you, it's even worse.
Go on,
a couple
that?
Of years ago, I was so frustrated, I decided to bite the bullet and buy from BT a thing called Ethernet First Mile. It costs £300 a month.
Ouch. It's like a leased line.
Yeah, effectively it is, with a special piece of kit. Okay. They came along, drilled a hole through the wall of my house, stuck a cable through, messed around for months and months and months, and then I got an email saying, really sorry, but we can't provide this.
Wonderful.
Brilliant.
Planning.
Why? The manufacturer of the equipment that we would need to run on your thing doesn't manufacture anymore, and we haven't got a replacement, so sorry, we can't provide it. Okay, so I got a cable through the wall that doesn't go anywhere, yeah, and that was bad enough. I only found out a year ago that they'd been charging me every month because it was a company thing. They've been charging the company for it.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah. And I went back, I went, you've been taking £300 a month off us for this. Yeah. Well, you never supplied it, did we not? No.
Oh.
So we're currently, I still haven't had the money back. I'm still currently fighting them to get the money back.
Well, that sounds like $7,000 or $8,000.
Yeah.
Ouch.
It's $9,000.
Nine grand. 3 years.
Yeah.
There's a man who pays close attention to his bank statements at his office.
Well,
I think he might need help with his finances.
You
need a really good financial advisor, Paul.
Yeah. In my defence, I mean, we do have quite a few telecoms bits and pieces, and it was part of an integrated bill that wasn't really spelt out very well. Anyway, we're going to join the Channel Radio newsroom while I think of a way of getting out of that
hole that you dug for yourself.
Yeah, in the second half, we're going to talk to Simon. Here we go.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
You're listening to Channel Radio.